I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Wrestle Culture. Wrestling.
The body's not even cold in the ground yet.
It's not even got that theme anymore. Oh, if I listen, like, what the frick is that song? Oh, man.
Only the real cool kids know the new track about soda.
Controller's not even fat in 2021, brother. Catch up. Man's a sir.
RIP Stroman Express. I'm Adam Wilmore from What Culture, Joe Michael James, and Michael Ambler from What Culture to discuss, yeah, another eventful week in the world of wrestling. And, of course, review AEW Double or Nothing. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, I don't know. Subscribe.
There's going to be someone out there.
iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we review Raw, SmackDown, NXT, AEW Dynamite, pay-per-views. We have interviews. Got an interview with Nick Aldis coming out tomorrow. Roundtable discussions and a roundup of the week, complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on wrestling culture. As I said, though, joined by Phil and a handful. Thanks for bearing. I did say just before we start recording, bear with me for this intro. But it was worth it, wasn't it, Hamlet?
That's a hospital pass of all, but I'm not a wrestling culture regular. I need warming up with that sort of stuff. I thought at least you'd throw it to Phil with having to deal with that shit. Like, yeah. Anyway, yeah, like, pretty sad about all the releases this week. I'm sure it won't turn into patter within 48 hours. So how are you, Phil?
Just thank Thomas the Tank Engine and you're going to put on the serious... Oh, yeah, this is really bad. the difference in presenters in this place. Yeah, I can't, was there a question? I can't even remember anymore.
I don't know. Anyway, Phil, your reaction to these releases. I'm not making light of people losing their jobs, of course, but it is... We're trying to find humour in these dark times. Mm. Phil, I take it you were as shocked as the rest of us when that news broke on, what was it, Wednesday afternoon? Yeah.
Yeah, it's mental. It just keeps coming. We thought, like, Tom Phillips was going to be one of the more shocking releases that we didn't see coming. And then all of a sudden, we've got Braun Strowman on the chopping block. And, like, the likes of Aleister Black, who they've just started up a brand new story and a brand new feud, and then got bored of it, or, like, what? 4 weeks into it and moved on. It's, yeah, mental. Some of the names in this just don't make any sense whatsoever. SmackDown's down to 7 female competitors now. So that's good. I don't understand any of these ones. Like, out of all of them, like, a lot of the time it sounds harsh, but, like, you can kind of see it. Like, either they've not been used on TV in, like, a really long time, and, like, you can see people that, like, might be thinking in the wings, like, oh, this might be me. But these ones just came completely out of left field.
Yeah, I think I said this at the time. A friend of mine texted me about Baron Corbin because we'd heard this news about a major WWE release coming. And a friend of mine said, do you reckon it could be Baron Corbin? And I was like, no, he's in the middle of Crown stuff with Shinsuke Nakamura. So there's no way they're going to get rid of someone, you know, in, like you say, Phil, in and around a storyline or who maybe, you know, featured in a major title picture in the last month or so. They're not going. Like, I didn't want to speculate prior, but when you think like major WWE releases, my mind went to someone like Jeff Hardy, who, again, I'm not wishing anyone to be released, but you're like, well, he's only really being used on Main Event, and you know, he's a legend, and he certainly, you know, would and probably could come back to company as and when they need him, but they don't need him right now. And but not bloody Aleister Black and Braun Strowman, along with the other names as well. Like Lana's just been in and around the title picture for months, Phil.
Yeah, they seemed obsessed with that Lana, Naomi, Mandy Rose, Dana Brooke match. They love that match. They've been doing it all the goddamn time on Raw. Yeah, and it's like I say, it just completely out of left field. Doesn't make any sense. I think, like, was it PW Insider were reporting last week that they kept the Aleister Black storyline off TV so it could kind of like ruminate for a little bit and like give it a bit of time to build? Nope, nope, not that. Not that's not the reason.
And Hamlet said, you said yourself when we were doing the SmackDown preview earlier on today, like, you forget Ruby Riott was literally on telly with the tag team champions last week.
Yeah, it's crazy. I was like, I managed to finally get Miller onto the SmackDown review podcast last week because Gareth left me, and I've been threatening to do it for ages, but like the timing's never actually lined up. But he was on it, and we were just talking about how like ridiculous it is how they're using Ruby Riott and Liv Morgan, because they just come them on. But they're on TV all the time, but all the time they're completely losing. Like they're always in there somewhere, but it's not like they were ever forgotten about. It's not like they were like left behind the scenes and not used for ages. They were always there and always on TV. They just happened to be losing all the time. And now they've released Ruby Riott, and it's like this women's tag team scene, absolutely desperate for tag teams and people in it. And the only, like, arguably a tag team that has been working really, really hard to be a tag team. Like they've got the Riott Squad, they like got their gear sorted, and they like they're even in their losing efforts on SmackDown, like every time they seem to pull out a new like tag team move and things, and it looks like they've been putting a lot of effort in behind the scenes to try and make it work no matter what they were given by WWE. And then like someone that's like actively working hard to try and do better, and then yeah, at least it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, Hamlet, we've talked, we did an entire podcast about it earlier on this week, but it doesn't get any easier to talk about afterwards. And, you know, yet again, the talk of this leads to us speculating about the future of WWE on the whole.
Yeah. It's I use Bailey, I think, as an example when we did our releases podcast, the idea that I would come to you both and say, oh, guys, Bailey's been released. And you could say, well, that can't be possible. Not Bailey. Like, you absolutely can't. And then it doesn't take you that long into your Braun Strowman argument to be why it couldn't be him, or that long into our Black argument as to why it can be him, or Ruby Riott. I don't know if it was on SmackDown last week or if I was so into SmackDown that I was then watching ancillary content, but I recall the Riott Squad shooting an angle last week about how they've got to get serious again. They've got to get back on track. And it felt like that was the start of something, as if all those losses weren't just for the sake of it, as if all those losses that Phil references weren't just being tossed off, they were actually going to turn it into something. So all of that has just been dropped cold. Everybody can be dropped cold. Yeah, like we're hinting towards this WWE sale, which is like, it's weird, right? If you turn to wrestling Twitter for either your news from the sources that you trust or your crack from the content producers, hello from all three of us, you might trust, or whatever it is, you'll find as many people earnestly believing it's going to happen as not. And that's as much to do with Vince McMahon, because lots of very sound-minded people have suggested, with some evidence, with some rationale and reason, that everything here is being prepped for a sale. Then there's just as much rationale and reason on the other side. Well, no, because Vince McMahon. Like, nobody can even visualize a world, a WWE, without Vince McMahon in it. So not until he's shuffled off this mortal coil, or in his case, I guess, swaggered, arms flailing off this mortal coil, will this even be a conversation? And yet, going back to that rational and reasonable argument for it happening, cost cutting, budget cuts, various people being surplus to requirement at the literal expense of the product. That's the thing I keep thinking about with Aleister Black and Ruby Riott, and to a lesser extent Braun Strowman. But as you kind of put it this week when we did our releases pod, Wilbon, nobody, you don't want to think of anybody as dead wood. But unfortunately, when a release talk comes around, you look at people that just simply aren't involved or aren't getting used, or the ones that are like at that bottom rung, maybe themselves are maybe thinking, maybe I want to be released because I just don't want to come to work and sit around or not get used or whatever. Almost none of these people fell into that category. Like, if we're being really, really harsh, Santana Garrett wasn't being used on NXT because the rumour was she was coming up to the main roster. So she would maybe classify as that. But even that was a little bit of a shock. I feel like we're edging closer to WWE releasing all of their wrestlers and having nobody on contract and then just renting them back from this giant database, like on Championship Manager or something like that. Like, if it really is about keeping costs low, just have nobody on the books. And then think, oh, we need to put a card together for next week. Well, who's in the pot? Well, he's there, she's there, they're there. They've just signed for AEW, so we can't use them, but we'll keep an eye because we've heard they're only on a six-month deal. He's working in New Japan, but he'll be back in time for the Survivor Series. Or they could run their entire business like that for all we, like, sort of, for all that it matters weekly, and we know because we talk about it every week, for all so much of this does not matter weekly. Like, it sort of frightens me as a fan just how threadbare this roster could get and how more cuts they could do that we would deem unthinkable on the surface. Wrestlers will probably be worried. And what's worst of all is that that's probably how Vince McMahon or his gang of higher-ups like it. They want those guys to be... The spirit of competition that all the old guards wish was in the Attitude Era, it's different now. Times are different. So is this a new way to try and inspire a bit of fear in them instead? It's not nice. It's really unpleasant.
Phil, before I get your thoughts on a possible WWE sale, it just got compounded even more today. I know you edited the news and me and Andy were talking about the fact that Vince McMahon sat there going, just don't get what it is with Aleister Black and Buddy Murphy and only it's Braun Strowman. I've got three other massive guys anyway. It defies belief sometimes, I think, the words that comes out of, well, allegedly, according to Dave Meltzer, the words that come out of his mouth, eh?
Yeah, doesn't get their wrestling style for Aleister Black and Buddy Murphy. Like, what's not to get? They're very good at wrestling. It's quite obvious and you can see it in everything they do. And yeah, Braun Strowman, it's okay because we've got Omos and Commander Aziz now. We don't need any other big dudes. Like, Braun Strowman's the most WWE guy you could possibly picture. Like, if you're going to draw down a WWE superstar, maybe without the beard, but everything else about him is just screams like Vince McMahon, I would absolutely love this guy. And maybe they just got bored of their own toy. They booked him into the ground. Like, they had it at one point. He was over as Rover and, like, could be the next, like, big thing. And then they just kept on messing with him and messing with him and messing with him. And then they chucked him in a swamp and then, like, just done all these things. And now Vince is just like, ah, he's a bit rubbish now, isn't he? Like, and he's because of you, you idiot. It's like a child getting bored of a toy because they've broken it and, like, taken its arms off. It's like, oh, it doesn't have an arm now. I don't want to play with this anymore.
I don't want to use this as a cheap plug to an article coming soon to WhatCulture.com about 10 ways WWE booking failed Braun Strowman. It's by your second favorite Michael at WhatCulture. But I will say that for Vince to suggest that he is surplus leads us back to beating that dead horse again, doesn't it? Well, how do your wrestlers become surplus? You make them that way.
Yeah.
Like, we go back to the Iconics. Well, we don't really see what value the Iconics got anymore. Probably because you, for no good reason, split them up. You know, like, these wrestlers have never been any less autonomous. And then it's them that get to suffer the consequences of loads of other people's decisions. Well, I say loads of other people's. Loads of other people's informed by one guy's decisions. It's never on the wrestlers, and yet their lives and careers hanging about. It's where we, last year, like, having a good laugh at Retribution, there was points where it was like, we can't laugh at this because this is career-threatening stuff. Like, now we know that we're back in the world of cuts. It's all well and good to rag on Retribution and T-Bar and complain that Slapjack's not getting a push. But, like, that's so bad that this could be the end of their careers. Like, it stops being a laughing matter when you think, well, this is the upshot. If they fail so hard, they'll just be gone.
Just looking, because I was trying to remember the other stuff that happened about Braun Strowman's WrestleMania record, which is WrestleMania 32. He was there, wasn't he, for the Rowan Rock match?
Yeah.
WrestleMania 33. Oh, he's going to be the next big thing here. Oh, he didn't win the Battle Royal. That got won by Mojo Rawley through Gronk. WrestleMania 34. Win the tag titles with now What Culture employee Nicholas. WrestleMania 35, we were there. He won the Battle Royal, but almost lost to Saturday Night Live goobers. WrestleMania 36, it's official, Michael Hamblett. days before WrestleMania, replaces Roman Reigns, defeats Goldberg, wins the Universal Championship. WrestleMania 37, as Hamfoot tweeted earlier on this week, goo stuff, and then he beats Shane McMahon. It's just bonkers. But Phil, your thoughts, because I'm fascinated. It's so, everyone at What Culture seems to have a different opinion on this. Your thoughts on a potential WWE for sale sign being put up in Stamford?
I there's something with Vince McMahon and WWE that I just can't ever see him willingly selling it to a third party. Like, maybe stepping down and giving it down to Stephanie and Trips or something. Maybe you could see that at some point when he physically can't walk anymore, maybe, or something. But just to pass it on to someone else and just like sell the whole thing, I can't picture it at all. There's no like possible outcome in any of this that in my mind ends up with Vince McMahon letting go of his baby that he's like worked on for all this time. So yeah, I don't know. I just can't see it. I can't picture it at all.
You reminded me of something I got very angry about earlier on this week, Hamflet. And it's something I've been perpetually angry about for over a year now. And that is how WWE books their talent and then goes, "Bit crap this, isn't it?" Shayna Baszler. I tweeted about her. I can't stop myself. I tweeted about her at the start of this week. I'll say this again. I tweeted, "How do you piss up WWE?" And the picture of her after that. Some people were like, "Oh, you were all over her when she won that Elimination Chamber." No, let's go and watch the footage. Let's go and watch me and Phil Chambers and how
out there for everyone to see how into that we were.
We were going, "This is fantastic," and everyone else like, "This is rubbish." And we were like, "What are you on about? It's brilliant." But there's that shot of her winning the Elimination Chamber, and that's what I used. Big response from people, divisive response on Twitter. But I mean, where did it all go wrong? And it's aside from being called up from NXT, Hamflet, how did they screw up so much? Because I went away on my honeymoon and I came back, and Adam Cleary looked at me and said, "So Shayna Baszler bites people on the neck now." And I went, "Excuse me." So what was that, the catalyst for it all going wrong? Or was it what I keep coming back to, which is, don't have a lose to Becky Lynch at WrestleMania?
You live a year and a week in pro wrestling now. On Tuesday, there was nothing more disgusting than the state of Shayna Baszler on Raw. On Wednesday, loads of people got sacked. And it's like, you should be lucky that you're fighting a doll, Shayna, actually. You should be bloody grateful that random objects are causing you to have wobbly legs in the middle of a match. Like, this is the greatest job in the world, Shayna. But yeah, like, switching gears to wrestlers that maybe wish they could get fired. Shayna Baszler, it all went wrong, I think, when she lost to Becky Lynch. Not because that loss wasn't recoverable, it was. But she showed a remarkable lack of interest in recovering it. And I think that spoke to Vince McMahon's remarkable lack of interest in her. You know, she just went into Money in the Bank. Oh, never mind, I didn't win. At, like, shambles into a tag team with Nia Jax, which she's not even the focus of. And it's like, yeah, fine, whatever. Shayna Baszler would not tolerate a slap in NXT without breaking somebody's arm in response. And I just think the manner in which they... Because as, like, think about Elimination Chamber. Like, we were all very pro this, as you've said. I do remember it was divisive, but the other half of the divide were foolish. It was awesome. That was a two-pronged recovery job. She'd not won the Rumble at the game to Charlotte Flair. Mm. She'd been a vampire on Raw. So it wasn't just, oh, she's here and she's being Shayna Baszler. It's, oh, she's here. And Christ, we better show people who Shayna Baszler actually is because we've already kind of botched it. Like, so the Becky Lynch thing, losing was less than ideal. But the fact that she'd already done, like, already had those missteps and then lost to Becky Lynch, all of a sudden the Elimination Chamber becomes the rule-proven exception rather than, oh, it's all so good. You look back on that now, that was the one night they got it right. Everything else has been a wash, all of it. And it just, it's, you know, it's boring now to talk about how all the old NXT call-ups just die on the main roster. Not all of them, obviously, but you know what I mean? Like all the ones that you just have so much hope for, it all just goes to pieces when they get to the main roster. That's such a dead issue because it's so constant and consistent. But if this is their first idea for Shayna Baszler heading back into the singles division, which is to like feud with Alexa Bliss and a doll. I mean, for one, I suppose it's marginally better than Alexa Bliss and Lily winning the tag belts. But if this is their idea for her like entryway back into singles competition, keep your expectations low because Alexa Bliss probably wins the feud.
This is
not like a sort of like I think you pointed this out on our Raw review. Those takes that were like, because oh, they've lost a tag match, but like Shayna's had enough. She's put on a leather jacket. And she's going to go deal with this. That we're alluding to the idea that like the real Shayna Baszler's back, like the work of a psychopath, the tweet of an absolute psychopath. What the hell were you watching if you thought, finally we're getting back to business, Queen of Spades, Four Horsewomen. It's a fucking doll.
Yeah,
mate.
Yeah. I couldn't get over people saying that. And Phil, well, as with many things on Monday Night Raw, I have no hope. But Phil, I don't blame you if you're not keeping up with Monday Night Raw. You get the fun of SmackDown with like Roman Reigns and that brilliant stuff with the Usos and the Mysterios and you lucky bastard. Anyway, in case you missed it, Phil, Shayna Baszler got pinned by Carmella's wine bloke on Raw this week because of Pyro.
Yeah, I don't watch Raw. I'm not going to lie and say that I do, but I do edit ups and downs, so I get the gist of it through that. So literally, Simon Miller watches Raw, so I don't have to. But yes, I saw this. And yeah, she lost, the only person to have lost to Reginald so far. And she specifically addressed a doll saying, I don't like you very much. Genuinely wouldn't be surprised if at some point in an eventual match between her and Alexa Bliss, like the lights go off and then the lights come back on and Lily is pinning her and the ref just goes, okay then, and goes 1, 2, 3 and Lily wins the match. Like at this point, it would not surprise me. But yeah, I'm glad Hamflet brought up the Royal Rumble because I was going to mention that as well. Like you come in and yes, you get the 7 eliminations, and I think she tie with Bianca Belair for like the most amount of eliminations in one Rumble in the first thing, and it's like, oh my god, she's here, she's on the main roster. But then yeah, she didn't win it, and it was like a little bit like the Elimination Chamber was rehab already for someone who you've only just brought up and should be this monster that you're leading into WrestleMania to make believe that she's gonna beat the man this epic character has been born over the last few months. She was, yeah, onto a losing battle straight away as soon as she came up. And this now, where's the breakup of Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler? Like, WWE love breaking up tag teams. Love it! It's their favorite thing to do from, like, the Iconics and Heavy Machinery and Andrade and Angel Garza and countless others. You could be here all day listing them all that they've broken up over, like, the last year or whatever. And the one that they've been teasing for ages are possibly going to break up at some point is the one you're not breaking up, and you're just doing this weird side story with Shayna Baszler and Alexa Bliss. It makes absolutely no sense. Why aren't you just having Shayna Baszler destroy Nia Jax completely in a match where she looks like a bit of a beast and go from there? It's why do they take the most convoluted route possible to something that should be so goddamn simple, and instead they're just making out lose to Reginald and start talking to a doll? It's bad.
It's bad. That's what it is, Phil. It's just bad.
Genuinely cannot wait for fans to be back just to see how much they crap all over WWE.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, speaking of fans coming back, we have to talk a little bit about Double or Nothing. Hamflet, you and I, along with Cedric, did a major review of it, which is available right now. So, Phil, I'm just going to lean on you a bit more for this one. What was your favourite moments of Double or Nothing? And your reaction when Sting did the thing?
I was going to say favourite moments has to be the Sting doing the thing. He got bloody powerbombed on the ramp and then he did a bloody crossbody off the ramp. It's absolutely mental to anyone who was saying about like, oh, they better be careful with Sting in AEW. He knows what he can do. He knows what his body is available to do. And my God, did he show everyone why he's still absolutely bloody brilliant. It was fantastic. And to have fans back for it as well is just absolutely great. John Moxley's entrance, easy one, absolutely fantastic. Just the pop of the fans is just, fans being back and crowded in a building. It's just so nice. What else? I honestly, genuinely really loved the finish to the main to the Kenny Omega match, the little sneaky roll up, and when Orange Cassidy finally thought he's come in, especially with how they've been building this Kenny Omega character, and then just to have like your main, say main event, but like your title match end with a sneaky roll up by a guy like Kenny Omega at your first match with your first show back with fans. I just think it's just so perfect for that character to be able to get that pop from the fans, and especially doing it to a guy like Orange Cassidy, who just everybody adores. I just think that in itself was an absolutely fantastic little moment on the pay-per-view. The only bad side of the whole show, I didn't really like the Stadium Stampede match.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna lie, I wasn't that into it. I don't know what everyone else's thoughts are here. But yeah, I wasn't feeling it. I don't think the feud was right. First Stadium Stampede and like the kind of comedy that they got in there, I don't think fits the feud at all in the way it is. And it just, some of it just felt like it was a bit shoehorned in and it didn't really fit. I don't know, there was just something off about it that I didn't really relate to it. I didn't buy into it at all.
It was weird. I was disappointed by it, but I also didn't have sky high expectations going in, I suppose.
I still maintain that whatever happened in the body of the match would have been made better by a pinnacle win. I'm not thick, and I could tell what they were doing. Like, people were hammering me on Monday morning. I'd gone to sleep. I like tried to close my eyes for half an hour because the show finished at 5:30 and I was back up at 6:00. But I woke up to a number of pissed off AEW fans reminding me about the metaphorical connotations of starting in the empty ring in the past and moving to the present day in this huge like Judas party. And I'm not fake. I got that, right? Like, it was a really nice party atmosphere at the end that like they could have this moment with the fans again that we'd all talked about how nice it was going to be for the fans to be able to have their like a Judas sing along. For all I'm sometimes a little bit critical of Chris Jericho's spiraling ego, like you can have one. And it was a really good one. It was a really nice one. Mm. Sammy Guevara got more over as a singles guy at the end. But yeah, like, again, it's clearly a very subjective one, this one. But, and you know, as kind of Phil's pointed out there, it didn't match his own personal taste. It didn't match mine either, or my expectations. I don't feel it. I don't know what I'm supposed to feel for the pinnacle, but one thing I don't feel is enthusiasm. I'm not interested and entertained by the stable at present. They feel more like...
Well, the
like,
PR stuff in the bar just felt so shoehorned in that just does not fit their characters at all. It was like...
Very unusual of AEW to craft a scene that looked reminiscent of one of those Raw Legends nights where there's three legends that you don't know all disconnected at a party that looks terrible. Yeah. The construction... It was just like the whole thing felt very forced. Stadium Stampede last year, like, I don't know... Everybody's got their own like memories, I guess, of Stadium Stampede and indeed May 2020. But I don't think it's too great, like an overstatement to say it, like Stadium Stampede 1 was like there to save wrestling fans' lives last year. You know, it was there to have something, anything to cling on to. It was a flash of ingenious creativity in a time where there was virtually nothing else, nowhere else to turn to. It was wrestling as escapism. If wrestling was going to exist at all, when we were told that we weren't allowed to hug our family while they were doing arm drags on each other, it had to exist for the most ludicrous form of escapism. And they nailed it with Stadium Stampede, a euphoric memory for all of us. When they announced Stadium Stampede 2, I think the general consensus was, oh, it's not going to be like the first one because this feud is serious. This feud needs to feel like violent and dangerous. And last year was about something entirely different. This year is about an actual storyline where, you know, there's like baby faces that are fighting to stay together. There's heels that are like, you know, put them out forever. It's going to be totally different. And it sort of wasn't. A lot of it was tribute act stuff to last year. It lacked the creativity of last year's match. So you're thinking, not only am I watching a tribute act to a match that no longer needs to occur because there's 5,000 people in the building next door, but I'm also watching something that is no longer necessary to the viewing audience at home because, like, I've had pints with my friends. So I don't need to watch Hangman Page and Jake Hager having a beer because I've been able to be fortunate enough to go for a beer myself. What I want now is a wrestling feud in front of wrestling fans. And I think that missed the mark. And we're recording this obviously before a Friday night Dynamite. So critical is probably an overstatement, but I think the next steps are crucial because MJF did not like deviously plan and plot for 8 months to put Chris Jericho out for a week and then lose a big match. That's the sum total of his master plan.
Mm.
It's not very MJF, is it? Like, I don't know, like, if this is what they've plotted all along, I think they've got it wrong. And I'd like to think as a result, they didn't plot this all along and maybe they've changed their mind on the fly or they've dealt with different circumstances. Captain Hindsight would say you swap these matches around and you do Stadium Stampede on television and Blood and Guts on pay-per-view with a full crowd. But I think that's unfair because you're not going to know that until both have happened. But perfect world, you'd have reversed these.
Yeah. I will say as well, like I was going to say, like the pinnacle in everything that they are and stand for and do, they should feel like kind of cool. Like they're the bad guys. They've got the suits and the money and like the as a group, they should feel like above you, but also like kind of cool at the same time. And there was nothing that they did in that match. Like none of them came off as looking like cool bad guys in that match at all. They, if anything, came across kind of looking a bit like dorks. And that's not what you want from a faction like the Pinnacle, like as early on in their run as it is. The Inner Circle can get away with it because they've always been doing this stuff with like their talk show and stuff, but the Pinnacle should be something different. And they kind of got dragged into the Inner Circle's dorkiness.
I love him, but I thought Shawn Spears was going to go into a musical number when he was sitting around those bloody chairs at some point. Final word on Double or Nothing, Phil. I saw people asking us over the weekend, like, oh, what's your pick for the Joker, for the Casino Battle Royal and the winner? None of us picked A, Leo Rush, and B, Jungle Boy. A genius decision on both parts, I'd say.
Yeah, absolutely. Leo Rush was on nobody's radar, and they also didn't, like, overplay their hand like they have done in the past with these things, which I think is part of the huge reason why it's pulled off and worked so well. But he's a great fit for AEW. And I think he'll absolutely smash it over there. And Jungle Boy, just for that ending of that match alone with that little back and forth between him and Christian Cage, was absolutely fantastic. And just the sheer amount that the crowd was behind Jungle Boy for it and then to get the big victory at the end, I think is absolutely perfect. It'll be a great match to elevate Jungle Boy a little bit through having a match with Kenny Omega. He's obviously not going to win, but he doesn't need to. The fact that he's in that position will elevate him alone. And yeah, you can't come out of that match listening to that crowd thinking, oh, they've made the wrong choice here at all. Like, he is so over, and it's just added him to that next level. I thought it was absolutely fantastic.
I'll tell you what was super cool about Wild Thing for John Moxley and Where Is My Mind for Orange Cassidy is that it allowed everybody to forget about Baltimore. Like, nobody even considered until the Battle Royal how awesome that was going to be because we had other songs that we were excited to see playing live. And it's like, oh, God, yeah, he paid for that. Like, and then getting like hearing those, was it? I can't remember, it wasn't You Deserve It or something like that. There was a chant that you can imagine being piped in, Dot Wav in the Thunderdome, and it was just happening for real over this perfect song as a celebration. You're like, oh, fans actually feel this, they actually like the baby face that has been selected for the big push. It's just such a nice feeling.
Before we move on to today's hashtag bloody good quiz, Phil, I saw this news story and I thought, well, the moment we report this, I have to find out what Phil's thoughts on it on Friday are. Molly Holly reportedly backstage at Raw this week, tryout, potentially becoming a producer for the company. Are you like me with this one, Phil, in terms of you like, oh, well, that'd be great, but also, she's too good for WWE. You'll ruin her.
I was just going to say, it's absolutely great. I think she's a fantastic talent. And I think she'll have a lot to offer, like new people and things like that, in terms of, like teaching them. However, it's WWE. They don't deserve Molly Holly at all in any way, shape or form. She's too good for this world, let alone WWE. And I wish that she'd go to somewhere like AEW, because I just feel like they'd be a bit nicer, nicer people, and it's just a nicer environment. Just poor Molly Holly. Well, maybe she'll be the catalyst for change in WWE.
I was gonna say,
you just sprinkle in that little bit of niceness and it'll just spread slowly within the sort of roots of WWE, the hard, crusty, horrible roots of WWE.
Hamlet,
maybe she'll be the force to change for good.
Yeah, Hamlet, she could be the polar opposite of when Vince injected WWE with the NWO. It's like the opposite of a lethal dose of poison.
Ironic, considering that's what he'd consider an actual dose of poison, is just being nice. He's wouldn't know what to do with it. Oh, I'm talking, I can't breathe. Like, I fully predict Molly Holly to go to waste as a coach, but it's okay, because then she moves to AEW and just has some of the best matches of the year. Because that's the new pattern for their female coaches. I look forward to the Molly go around on Britt Baker when Molly becomes AEW Women's World Champion in the year's time. No, it's nice. It's just nice. One of the nicest ever Hall of Fame stories ever was Beth Phoenix. One about Molly Holly paying for a training unsolicited, gave her the money for, like, I think left the money behind. Like, Beth Phoenix got there and was like, "Your bills paid," or who, and it was just Molly Holly, because she just cared enough about the future and saw how much work Beth Phoenix was putting into it. And it's those kind of things that, like, never get mentioned until somebody is able to use their spotlight to mention it. And every time somebody uses their spotlight to talk about Molly Holly, it just makes her even nicer than she was before. So
even her own spotlight, she used that to be incredibly humble and completely without ego and put over everyone that you never hear anyone put over, and like take her moment in the sun to just shine a light on other people. And it's like she can't even use it for herself to put herself over. So.
I hope whatever they're paying her, like ultimately she ends up on double because they realize just how necessary she is. And then when they release her, she gets this awesome like 90-day payout to get to sit home and do nothing on that double money as well. Like, I just want nice things for Molly Holly.
Yes, exactly. And a word on what you said there, Hamlet. Homework for you. If, like me, you just watch the main card of Double or Nothing, go and watch Serena Riho. My word. Up there with, I think Hamlet said at the time, some of the best, whatever you want to call them, kickoff, buy-in, whatever you're calling it, pre-show matches. It's up there with the best of them, in my opinion. So well worth checking that out. Well, speaking of Serena Deeb, she gets a very nice mention from Nick Aldis, who I chatted with earlier on this week, the full interview of which will be out on our YouTube channel and is out as a podcast tomorrow, ahead of Nick defending the NWA World Heavyweight Championship against Trevor Murdoch at When Our Shadows Fall this Sunday at a reasonable time. Afternoon in America, which means we can actually watch it here in the UK. If you want it, it's going to be on Fight on pay-per-view there. It's well worth checking out the interview, though. That's going to be out tomorrow, as I said. And what needs to happen next after Double or Nothing with myself and Michael Sidrick is the podcast, the Get the Table, that is coming out on Sunday as well. But enough of all this. It's now time for a Bloody Good Quiz. And this week's quiz is brought to you by Jojo Nix. If you want your name associated with a hashtag Bloody Good Quiz, just subscribe to What Cult Wrestling and leave us a 5-star review on there. Or as Jojo did, 1-star. Jojo gave us a 1-star review, right? Just says, get this out. I don't even remember this happening. It was the start of this month, right, Amblet? 1st of June, I think, Jojo left this review. 1-star. And it just says, purely for the hate of Big John. Talking about John Cena. When do we slag off John Cena?
Well, never. Never, ever. I've cracked this code already, Wilborn. 1-star. What the star ratings do, right, ultimately, they affect the spread of the podcast. They jimmy the algorithms a little bit so that you fall in the podcast charts.
Oh.
What are the initials of Jojo? And who is the only podcast above us in the podcast charts?
Getting a little bit worried, were you?
The evidence is there. Ain't he great, man? Ain't he great? Like, don't piss him off. We're just a bunch of slap nuts to that guy. Fair play, Jeff. Thank you for the 1-star. Thanks for listening.
Also, like, that was like when WWE were like, oh, can you crack the code? Like, they're like X plus one, two, and then whatever. It was the worst code ever. Oh, what could it all mean? I suppose they did that. Was that before or after everyone went, it's Sting in the shed? And then he went, no, it's not.
Love that crap, man. Honestly, on forums at the time, it was like, is that Sting's chin? No, I think you'll find it's Shawn Michaels' chin. Look at this diagram. We got a blueprint. It's like Charlie from It's Always Sunny with a bunch of chins on a wall. It's just like, nah, it's definitely Shawn Michaels' chin. I think you'll find it's the Undertaker's chin. Actually, I've got this picture of Sting without face paint. It's his chin. It's his 1990 chin, not to be confused with his Crow era 1997 chin, actually. Brilliant. Great times.
Oh, what a load of bollocks that was. Anyway.
So, yes, thanks, Jeff Jarrett, for that one-star review.
Yeah,
we're on to you. We'll take our slot back.
So I thought I'd write a quiz in memory of all the recently released WWE wrestlers with some alternative facts about them. Just going to be having a lot of fun writing this quiz, I've got to be perfectly honest. Usual rules apply, though. 10 questions, multiple choice, shout your name, wait for me to come to you. Most of all, lads, it is just for fun. Are you both ready?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, question number one. It gets harder, I promise. Question one. Before the Wyatt family, which gang was Braun Strowman a part of? Was it Titus Worldwide?
Hamflet. The Rosebuds in the Exotic Express.
Is
of course.
I figured you might guess that. So the other options are going to be Titus Worldwide, the NWO, Adam Rose's Rosebuds, or LAX. You know. okay. Question two. Again, according to the internet, this it's not my fault. This isn't actually true. Tommy comes in and says, that's not true. What is Aleister Black's favourite movie of all time? Is it Fight Club, Aliens, Gremlins, or The Thing?
Ooh.
Hamflet.
Phil.
Oh, Hamflet just got in there before you, Phil.
I'm going to go with Gremlins.
It's not Gremlins, although that did terrify him as a child, he said.
I was going to go with The Thing.
The Thing, Phil, is his second favourite movie.
Ah, come on!
It was Aliens, not... You want to pick a Fight Club. Okay. Question three. Which award did Lana win from Rolling Stone in 2015? Was it Lame Duck of the Year, Worst Babyface, Most Underappreciated Performer, or Worst Storyline?
Hamflet. I want to... Let's not throw just Lana under the bus. Let's throw all four of them. Can it be Worst Storyline?
It is.
Yeah, man.
Storyline.
Ziggler and Rusev and Summer Rae and all that.
Fish.
I forgot about that giant fish.
Fish.
Rusev just loves chucking giant animals about, doesn't he? That's his...
I wouldn't be surprised if we look back, Hamflet, and we found out that was also in Florida. And it's like a Florida fishmongers who've then gone on to make two bollocks tomatoes.
Do you remember as well? There was like this sort of bit where like Lana's being Americanized, hanging out with Dolph Ziggler. So like one week she's got denim, and then the next week he's like trying to teach her like how to say things in a bit more of an American accent. And it goes from like her doing a full-on ravishing Russian Rocky IV voice to the next week sounding like Marie saying "John," as Nikki Bella. As all of the Russian had disappeared. And it was like, oh, hang on, they've got a gear for real. Walk it back.
I can tell you...
He never had a chance, did he?
No.
Poor Rusev.
I can tell you there wasn't a Worst Babyface Award. There were winners, though, in the Rolling Stone in 2015 for those other two. Lame Duck of the Year, take a stab.
Roman Reigns.
All good.
What year was it?
2015.
I can barely remember last week. Don't know.
It was Sheamus, apparently.
Okay.
But I reckon I could give you 20 guesses and you wouldn't guess Most Underappreciated Performer. 2015 was, of course,
Kane. What? What year is it?
Anyway, let's move on. 2-0 to Hamlet. Question four. Who did Ruby Riott, although, of course, she wasn't called this when she was wrestling there. She was Heidi Lovelace. Who did Ruby Riott hold the Shimmer tag titles with? Was it Dakota Kai, Tessa Blanchard, The Bunny, or Mia Yim?
Pamphlet. Was it Dakota Kai?
It was Dakota Kai as part of Team Slap Happy.
Yeah.
I didn't know that fact. I thought it was amazing, that.
I feel like that might be one of the few pre-WWE Ruby Riott matches I've actually seen. Showing my Ruby Riott weakness there. I'm hopefully going to see a lot more now. That's the main thing anyway.
Yeah.
Really like this question. Question five. Where in Australia is Buddy Murphy from? Is it
Brisbane?
Is it
Melbourne?
Is it
Sydney?
Or is it
Adelaide?
those options again?
Oh, dear.
Brisbane?
Yeah.
Melbourne?
Phil, I'm just going to stop this right now.
Adelaide.
Oh, sorry, Phil, you shouted your name out.
Was it Brisbane?
No, mate, it's not bloody Brisbane.
Just to recap, Hamlet, your options now.
No!
Melbourne, yeah. Sydney, yeah. Adelaide.
That second one, are you saying Melbourne? Or are you recording a cameo for Adam Wilburn? I'm going to go with Melbourne, actually.
You're bloody right, mate, it is Melbourne.
Bonza!
I feel so sorry because I haven't written a second question for Buddy Murphy. So his only question is just like, funny Australian stuff. He's phenomenally talented. He ain't going to struggle to get a job anyway. Best of luck to
question
him.
Question 11 is a best kept secret.
Question six. Which wrestling legend trained Santana Garrett? This is according to Wikipedia at the very least. Was it? One of these things is not like the others. Was it Victoria, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, or X-Pac?
Phil, was it X-Pac?
It wasn't X-Pac.
But it's Victoria now. He's just putting the others to puppets.
Do I go with who I want, or do I go with who I think? That's the question. Right. If it's him, she wants every belt put in on her. I'm going to go with Kevin Nash.
It's not Kevin Nash.
He's never trained anybody. The only person he's trained is me, and he doesn't even know it.
Scott Hall. According to Wikipedia,
right, yeah.
Scott Hall, who trained. Wow. Victoria is her favourite wrestler, or one of her favourite wrestlers, or a major influence on her, or something like that. But yeah, I was just like, I'll just put Victoria in there as well. I got three options. I'll just throw her in there because it'll just mess them up a little bit. But yes, Santana Garrett, another someone who's going to be massively utilised elsewhere because WWE is bloody doing that with her. Ridiculous. Question seven. What would Ruby Riott have been, according to her, if she wasn't a wrestler? Was it a musician, a teacher, an artist, or an actress?
Phil, why not? I'm on a bit of a winning streak. a teacher.
Yes, Phil, is correct.
On the board.
Well done.
Yeah, that was surprising to read that. Just... I can't imagine that teacher walking.
She's another one that like everyone always has nice things to say about her, like backstage as well, though, which is why I thought that.
I saw, I think it was Bailey who tweeted about her buying flowers for all the female dog owners on Mother's Day, which I thought was just a lovely touch. Again, more and more people just can't stop saying nice things about her. So what a bloody shame. Okay, question eight. How many followers does Lana have on Instagram? God. Is it 2.3 million, 2.8 million, 3.3 million, or 3.8 million?
Pamphlet. I'll go with the third one.
3.3 million?
Yeah.
Is incorrect. Phil, over to you.
I'll go with the big one. 3.8.
Phil Chambers racing back into this. It is.
Here we go.
3.8 million. It's probably changed at the time of recording. It was 3.8.
3.799999 now. Forget it, Lana. I mean, you were
enough
finished.
To never have to think about working for WWE ever again.
Okay. I think if my math is correct, we have two questions to go, and it is 4-2 to Hanford. Okay.
Here we go. Come back, kid.
Question 9. What is Aleister Black apparently scared of? Is it confined spaces, snakes, injections, or flying?
You'd like to think it's not flying with the job that he has.
Pamphlet. Injections.
It's not injections. Ah. Bill,
on
get
topic.
This right.
On your... topic, I see where you're going. What were they? Snakes?
Flying or confined spaces?
Oh, well, WWE did put him in a darkened room for a really long time, and they do like messing with people.
Yeah.
They do like to make people in ladder matches with fear of heights. I'm going to go with the confined spaces.
Phil Chambers, you know them so well. He was claustrophobic.
So they put him in a
Is that where they came up with the twatting dark room idea? Because Vince said he was scared of confined spaces. That's it, isn't it? 100%. Yeah,
100%.
Assholes.
Right, which means it comes down to my... It comes down to my favourite question. Phil, get this right, and it's a tie. It's just for fun, of course, but still. I love this question. This is one of the first ones I wrote, and we're putting that at the end. When Braun Strowman was a strong man, he once got so large he couldn't do what? Is it?
This just feels like the moment you were put on this earth to live. Honestly, like,
is it wear a watch, put his own contact lenses in, tie his own shoelaces, or walk through doors normally? I mean, like, yeah, go through sideways.
Braun Strowman's big. How big is he?
Phil, I'm going to jump in before.
Here we go, Phil. Right, to tie it up.
I feel like he'd have to walk through doors weird anyway, just because he's so tall.
Mm-hmm.
What were the other ones?
Wear a watch, put his own contact lenses in, or tie his own shoelaces.
But then I also feel like you'd want to get your options out before you say the real one in a question like this. I'm going to go with the door thing.
It's not the door
thing.
Ah, damn it. I don't think it is. I don't know. But this is not the thing he said that he couldn't do anymore.
Can I have the options again, please?
What? He got so large he couldn't do what? Wear a watch, put his contact lenses in, or tie his shoelaces?
Contact lenses isn't like, I suppose you
can't physically bend his arms to his face.
You wouldn't be able to like scratch your face or anything like that, would you? I'll go with, and I mean, you don't need to be a strong man to get big wrists. We all encounter that. I'm going to go with tying shoelaces.
Is the correct answer. Yeah.
Got those hands!
He apparently, I think, had to get his girlfriend at the time to tie his shoes for him.
Oh, I get it. It's one of them. Oh, I'm just too strong. Yeah, all right, Bron. Whatever you say, mate.
So congratulations, Michael Hamflett. You are the winner of this week's quiz. Phil, I'm sorry. Best luck in your future endeavours, mate.
You said it was just for fun.
This has been Wrestle Culture. Let us know your thoughts on everything we've discussed and how you got on the hashtag Bloody Good Quiz on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Watch there. You can follow all three of us. You can follow Phil Chambers at
Phil My Chambers, and you can follow Michael Hamflett at
Michael Hamflett, and you can follow Adam Wilborn at
Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. Make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling wherever you get your podcasts from. For daily wrestling podcast tomorrow, of course, the SmackDown review with Phil and Gareth, if he's not been replaced by Simon Miller again. And as I mentioned, that full interview with NWA World Heavyweight Champion Nick, all this fascinating chat, even talking about which WWE superstars he would love to face. And then on Sunday, probably ruined by what happens tonight on Dynamite. But regardless, me and Sidgwick talk all about what needs to happen in AEW following Double or Nothing. But this has been Wrestle Culture. My thanks to Phil Chambers. So, Michael Hamlet, thank you for joining us. And we will see you soon.
Wrestling.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.